This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back to the Lords of the Zing, show number 3, a.k.a. the Return of the King edition of Cakes and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. Hear Rush playing in the background, and when you hear that on the Junk Show, that means our good friend Joe Beninati is joining us, play-by-play voice for the Washington Capitals on NBC Sports Washington. Happy Sunday afternoon to you, Joe. How have you been?
Nice of you to play working man, since I'm the unworking man. Yeah, real nice. No, I'm fine. All's well. All's well, and hopefully for you guys, too.
Yeah, you mentioned the unworking man, a guy that you work with intimately, is the locker, Craig Lachlan. What has your contact been with him like during these last few weird months?
Very minimal, Cakes. Yep. And if you want to find him, he's usually playing tennis against his son. I believe some 30 years his junior, by the way. But since Locker has the new hips, the son of a gun loves to get out there on the tennis court and be socially distant from me. And from what I gather, I think Kyle is leading him in the series just briefly, and that keeps pissing him off too, by the way.
Yeah, they're like, it's 27-24? They're probably playing every day at this point.
Danny,
Joe.
they've been playing a lot of tennis. I've been kidding him. He's been on tour more than Rafael Nadal.
All right, so Joe B is with us here on Lord of the Zings, Return of the King edition. Joe, what are we hearing about? It seems like the Nationals ring ceremony or non-ceremony ring reveal, seems like everything is changing by the hour in terms of the NHL's proposal. I'm not sure I have the latest details yet, so give folks what you're hearing in terms of hockey coming back at some point.
Well, what I can tell you, guys, is that from what I gather, the league would love to have the month of June, if possible, be the training camp month for the teams that have been away for so long now, almost whatever, 11 and 12 weeks were going on. June would be the time where they would hope, if the rinks can be open, if players can get into the through the borders, etc., if they can start to get the green light to practice in small groups. I think June is the month where they'd like to try and get the guys back on the ice to find their skating muscles again. They're going to need 3 weeks of a training camp before they jump into whatever tournament that they propose. And what you've heard most recently is that the Players Association agreed to a 24-team format. In other words, of the 31 teams in the league, 7 of them will be dismissed. Their seasons are done. There will be no formal resumption of a regular season league-wide. It sounds like if and when they're able to get back on the ice, that they would begin with 24 teams, that there would be 8 teams granted a first-round bye, if you will. The other 16 would be playing into the tournament, which is normally a 16-team playoff tournament in the NHL. And the question is, guys, there are so many of them with regard to the safety of it all, where these games will be contested. I think we're strongly of the opinion, I think it's a matter of fact, in that there will be no fans in attendance, but at least there's a groundswell of support that there's a possibility to get back on the ice. And I would think best case would be July, as far as when we could get this 24-team event going. But even that may be ambitious. I just think there are so many hoops to jump through still with regard to player safety. I don't know that the players have completely given the thumbs up to the return at all. I know that they gave the ultimately they voted on 24 teams if and when, but there are so many other things that need to be, I think, put forth before we could say with any certainty when they're going to begin. Pie in the sky, though, it would be July, August. And then we would see how it would turn out, whether they would be the standard seven-round, best of sevens in the four rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs. From what I gather, the play-in part of the tournament would be best of five. There are some who are bucking for best of three. So like I said, there's so much still to be determined, but they're keeping hope alive.
Joe, you mentioned the spots for resuming the season. I would assume there would be like a Western and an Eastern pod format to this. I mean, this is just guessing at this point, but Vegas has been mentioned as like the Western pod spot, like the ideal spot. Where do you think in the East would make sense to place an Eastern pod if that's the way that this is going to shake out?
Yeah, Cakes, and I know people have been reading this, if they've been following along, that the league still had eight or nine cities potentially considered to be hosts for these pods. The thought process seems to be that we would take the 24 teams and divide it into two. I know that there was a lot of people who were feeling that it was going to be four pod cities. The more I keep reading, I think it's going to be just two. I've heard Vegas bandied about a lot, and mostly because of the amount of hotels surrounding T-Mobile Arena. I'll give you one, for example, that I think would be just about perfect, too. But it's another one that's more west, and it's Edmonton. Edmonton has a brand-new arena, spectacular ice surface, a practice rink that's connected to the main rink. Oh, by the way, they're connected to a five-star hotel in downtown Edmonton. I think that's what you're looking for. Whatever host city has to be considered, I think you need multiple practice rinks close by. You need multiple hotels close by where you can keep some sort of quarantine over the players. And then a really good ice surface and a good ice plant that's going to be able to hold up for a lot of games a day in high temperature heat.
Joe
Beninati with us here.
Not a world traveler like Joe Beninati, obviously. Edmonton has a five-star hotel.
Brand new, Cakes.
I
think it's a JW Marriott. We've been there. We were there right around the time when the Nats were winning the World Series. It's a beautiful spot. I'm not bucking for it. I'm just telling you that's the kind of operation you're going to need, any of the host cities. I heard for a while that Columbus, Ohio was one of the high candidates for it because, again, inside of Nationwide Arena, the Blue Jackets' regular dressing room is 30 yards from their practice rink. And within, I don't know, 4 to 5 blocks of Nationwide Arena, there are probably 5 to 6 hotels, all within walking distance. I think that's the kind of location that the league's looking for. You have to have multiple practice rinks, a really good ice surface, and a lot of hotel space to keep these guys to themselves.
Cakesy, when I was in Edmonton in the mid-2000s, they had some Timmy Hortons. That was the list of things that they had there. Our buddy Joe Beninati with us here on Lord of the Zings, Return of the King edition. So, Joe B., I'm a very selfish creature. I don't know that I'm a good person, but I think of things, and how do they affect me? How does all this affect the Capitals? I want it to affect the Capitals in a positive way, and maybe if it's a nice little bonus, the Penguins in a negative way. But tell me how all this is going to affect the Caps, in your opinion.
I just think it's a complete unknown, Danny, because you've never seen anything like this before. For example, let's see. Go back to 2018, the Caps win the Stanley Cup. When you win the Stanley Cup and you do so on June 7th, I think it was, you have approximately 3 months before you're going again in camp. Before we get going anyway, potentially, if it's July or August, you're going to have a similar time off as the Caps did during the Cup run to the new season, as you would have from the pause in the season for the Caps 69 games in to whenever we would resume. I have no idea how. Anybody who tells you they would know how this is going to affect these teams, I think is lying to you. But the one thing that would be, you could presume, is you've had 11, 12 weeks off now. By the time we get going, another month. The teams that were banged up, the teams that were injured – i.e. a Colorado, would those guys are all healthy. Players who would have been nowhere near Stanley Cup playoff contention ready are going to be ready when, if and when we get this going. So when I think back to where the Capitals were in the second week of March, I thought I was seeing an uptick in their play. I mean, they had been pretty mundane, pretty 500 for 6 to 8 weeks before then. I thought the first half of the season, they had times when they were gangbusters. They looked like they could beat anybody in the world. Then they had fallen off. A team like Philadelphia was racing them down at the time the league paused. You know, for their sake, they've got to be wondering what if. But if you go back to that time around March 11 to March 12 and just said, yeah, okay, boom, pick it up right from there, then I would favor a team like Philadelphia more than a Pittsburgh or a Washington. But you have no idea. Boston was the best team in the league, running away probably with the President's Trophy had they played it all the way out. Boston and Tampa were both really, really solid at that time. But who knows how 3 to 4 months off will affect anybody. I think, just speaking selfishly like you are asking me to about Washington, that team needed a break. I don't think they needed a 3 or 4 month break, but they needed a breather at that time. They looked like they were starting to slow down. Their game wasn't clicking and hitting on all cylinders. So they'll definitely be rested. The question is, how well will they reacclimate after this much time off? And hopefully the league's able to give them 3 weeks of a training camp to get ready. Then you would expect the cream to rise. And those teams that I mentioned are probably the front runners in the East.
Joe, do you think that Coach Reardon of the Capitals liked the fact that it's a real dogfight in the Metro? I know this is 2+ months in the rear view, but you know, you touch on it. The Caps have a 1-point lead on the Flyers, who were 9-1 in their last 10 before the shutdown. The Pens are right there with 86 points. And then you look at the Atlantic, and the Bruins are just cruising. They've got 100 points. The Lightning are up there with 92. But that Metro is just a battle every single night, whereas there's more separation in the other half of the Eastern Conference.
Cakes, when the Caps were winning President's Trophies in 16 and 17, and there were many people who felt hands down they were the best team, runaway team in the NHL, those teams did not have to go pedal to the metal down the stretch like this one would have. Like the one in 18 would have been asked to do a little bit better. I'm not saying that they would have been prime Stanley Cup contenders this season as they were in 16, 17, and 18, and even maybe even more again in 19. We're really lucky here. You're looking at a team that has been right there, top of the mind for people who are considering Stanley Cup champions. This Washington team, and Todd Reardon would have been an assistant to Barry Trotz on those President's Trophy teams that were starting to ease up a little bit at the, you know, the 7/8 mark of the season. This team has had to keep its nose to the grindstone and will have to once we pick this up. Now, the question is, I've heard this bandied about, you don't want to just, after a 3 or 4 month layoff, go right into playoff competition. So from what I gather, of this 24-team format, the Capitals would receive a bye, and they would play sort of a round robin against the other top teams in the East for seeding purposes, just so that you're not going to go from nothing to the all-important Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think most of the top teams will be very appreciative of that should we get this going.
Joe B., it's been a minute since, obviously, the Caps have played, since anybody's played anything. So refresh us. What was going great for this team, just in terms of you know, where they were clicking, and what was something you say, you know what, it's kind of a blessing that they got this time off so they can maybe work out some of the kinks here. What were things that were going well, things that were going poorly?
You know, the Capitals are always considered a high-octane offense, Danny, and I thought offensively their game was in good shape. There were some failings, some faults that were being exposed defensively. I didn't like the way the team was penalty killing at the time. Special teams, you know, if I had one lament, if I think back to where we were in March, I don't think special teams were all that good. Certainly not up to Washington standards, and that's both sides. The power play really wasn't very good, and that's been something that's given lots of teams a lot of nightmares in recent years. Facing Washington when you're a man short, the Caps were usually in that 25% range. I think they were ranked around 17th, 18th at the time of the stoppage. Penalty killing wasn't very sure. So special teams had to pick up in some way, shape, or form. They're always critical when you get into any sort of a playoff tournament. I thought the Caps for the most part, have been a very, very good road team this year, Danny. They've been one of the best in terms of overall winning percentage and total wins. I thought their home ice game was starting to get better at that time. There was a stretch there where, you know, they were in the doldrums playing inside a Capital One arena, which is totally foreign to me and I think to the guys who wear the red, white, and blue. So from that standpoint, getting reacclimated to playing well at home, keeping up the road dominance that they had displayed is something that's very, very important. And should we get back to things, making sure that the special teams are at the level we've grown accustomed to.
Joined by Joe Beninati, play-by-play voice for the Washington Capitals on NBC Sports Washington, at Joe BPXP on Twitter. With the season being shut down, Joe, did McClellan see enough from Ilya Samsonov to hand the reins over to him? I know we're jumping ahead. With Braden Holtby being a prospective free agent at the end of the season, has he done enough with the season being paused for McClellan to say, yeah, that's our number one guy heading into next season?
Cakes and Danny, I think this is where you're hitting upon the most important facet, and it's not just for the Capitals. It's for any team. After a resumption of this length, people always ask me, what's the hardest thing? Well, the hardest thing is finding your skating muscles. For any player, whether he be a goalie, a defenseman, a wing, or a center, these guys are phenomenal athletes. I'm sure they've kept, quote, in shape. But not being able to skate, you need to regain and refine those skating muscles. And again, these are the best skaters in the world. They'll find it relatively quickly. What's tough and almost, well, practically impossible to duplicate is a goalie stopping a puck. They can do all the hand-eye drills, the reflex drills, the tennis ball drills they want. And I'm sure that Braden Holtby and Ilya Samsonov are going through all the stretching classes. Braden Holtby is very partial to yoga. I'm sure he's keeping as flexible as possible. But what's got to be hard is to come off of this kind of a layoff and find your rhythm as a goalie. And I think it's great for Washington to at least have, at that time, have two guys that they feel like they could depend upon. And I think Todd Reirden and Brian McClellan would be fine with Braden Holtby, obviously with all the experience, and with Ilya Samsonov, with all this talent that he's shown, and obviously the desire to be the number one guy in the future. I think you're in a good place there having two of them. I think you might wind up needing them both, because who knows how well the goalies are going to bounce back. All of the best teams in the league have top netminders, but for me, a layoff of this length, I think, really affects the guys behind the mask more than any player on the ice.
Joe B., this is, you know, probably not a fair question here to ask, but you're an expert, so here it comes anyway. How prepared do you think, maybe even pro sports leagues in general, and specifically the NHL, how prepared do you think they are for the inevitability or potential inevitability for somebody testing positive and sort of going still all speed ahead here despite that, right? Because you get that many people, there's a great chance that somebody comes down with this damn thing, right? And either that's something that changes sports forever, like Rudy Gobert and everybody's canceled everything because of it, or it's part of the plan and we fold it in and we kind of figure it out. How prepared do you think they are?
I think they're doing a great deal of preparation at the league level with respect to chief medical officers. But, Danny, again, this is totally unknown.
Right.
And, you know, you said there's whether or not this is a fair question. I'll give you my opinion, but I don't know that anybody has the firm grasp of it. And I can definitely tell you this is at the forefront for the players with respect to, hey, do we really want to do this? I'm sure that, yes, they voted, okay, if and when we do this, we'll do it in a 24-team format. But I still think there are going to be athletes who need to be convinced that they can do this safely and that there's going to be safety paramount for themselves, for their families, for anyone connected to the resumption of the play, whether it be NHL, NBA, the start of the season for MLB. I'm sure there are a lot of athletes in the contact sports especially. I think to a lesser degree golf, to a lesser degree tennis, where distancing is natural in those sports. The contact sports, there has to be a measure of concern for all of the athletes. I can't speak for them, but I would bet in private groups that they're talking to each other and going, hey, are we going to be well protected? Are we going to be taken care of? And I am sure that those at the very, very top in the NHL, the people who are trying to put this league back together, are taking player safety as a paramount concern. You have to. You have to, or else it's not worth it. Why are we doing this? And I know people are going to say, Joe, chase the money. To heck with the money. Let's keep everybody safe with this.
Joe B., let's hope that in a year you're not joining me and Danny on a weekend radio show. Let's hope that we are watching some men's LAX Final Four, because it sucks that that, you know, is a casualty of the pandemic. I know you're a big LAX guy. You're a stud LAX goalie in college. And to have Memorial Day weekend without that event, it's kind of lame.
Oh, I turned on ESPNU today, and right now, literally, I'm listening to a game, a national championship game in women's lacrosse that I did back in 2014. They're playing this whole giant jamboree of the women's championship games today, the men's championship games tomorrow, and I'm crushed by, obviously, the loss of hockey. And then with respect to lacrosse, this is that time of the year when I'd be very, very busy, whether it be with the Big Ten tournament or the NCAA tournament. I'm worried about the fall in football. Guys, you know it. You've read it. People have read this, that sports and entertainment may be the last thing that comes back to anything close to normal. And I have the greatest fear about, if there's no football from a collegiate perspective, what that would do to athletic departments. It's a frightening proposition. And I pray every day that there's some sort of a medical breakthrough that will provide us with a safe therapeutic treatment, something that's going to make us feel more comfortable being in larger groups together. Because until that time, I'm worried that sports at that level can survive with nobody in the stands. And you know the athletes want fans in the stands, and you know the athletes want to be safe, whether they're on the ice or on the pitch or on the field, wherever they are, on the diamond. This is so unusual, and it's going to be just another thing that we get through, hopefully collectively as a nation and as a people, and we do it safely and we care for all those involved.
Cakesy, you sleep soundly on the ultimate lacrosse name, and my good friend who I saw win two national titles for Princeton, Winship Ross. You want a lacrosse name? Deal with that.
That's pretty good.
Princeton Tigers, two natty titles for old Bill Tierney. I got to see those in person after we got eliminated in our own conference tournaments. I got to catch those in person. So you're right, Joe B. It's just a lot of stuff that we're missing, man.
Some wonderful blue blood names.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Oh,
the best.
The LAX boys definitely have the upper crusty names, no doubt about it. Joe, thanks for taking
all
some time
good.
Out of the weekend, man. We miss hearing you and the locker on the calls of the Caps games, and hopefully get back to some normalcy soon.
Fellas, my pleasure. Thanks for doing what you're doing, Danny and Cakes. We appreciate it.
Yeah, of
course.
Thank
you, Joe.
That's Joe Beninati, play-by-play voice for the Washington Capitals on NBC Sports Washington. Let me give you his Twitter without butchering it this time.
You got this with Cakesy.
At JoeBPXP.
Yeah.
He's a great follow on your Twitter. Thank you, Danny. Thank you for the clap.
Now, hopefully, you rebound.
Now, hopefully you are as enthusiastic as you are there for my Game of Thrones performance, because I believe
ready,
when we come back, I'm going to take that quiz.
You're going to nail
and
this.
And both Vic and I are going to probably miss every single question. So if you want to laugh at me for not knowing nothing about Game of Thrones, this is your time. So we're going to do that next here on Cakes and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Game of Thrones time next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to Lords of the Zings, show number 3, the Return of the King edition. By the way, Danny, hopefully this third edition is better than some of the movie franchises third installments. I just came up with a few during the break. Jaws 3D, laughably bad, just terrible. The third Terminator, we touched on that.
Gross.
I mean, pretty gross. And Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, nearly killed the Halloween franchise.
I mean, what about the two of the greatest movies ever made? Some people might even argue that the second one's better than the first one.
Yeah.
What about Godfather 3? Just undoing all kinds of goodwill.
I think Flakesy saw that in the theater way back in the day. I want
Godfather
my like
three?
I want my prorated $8 back or however much I spent on that trash. Just terrible.
Just dreadful.
So hopefully this is a better we're giving a better showing today than some of these third installments. Just gross.
Yuck.
Now, I can't guarantee that my performance in this next segment will be good because
I can't.
It's a Game of Thrones quiz, and I think my total Game of Thrones viewing in my lifetime has to be 8 minutes or less.
Oh no.
My only vantage point is pop culture references and Funny Danny.
Basically overhearing me over talk about it during your commercial breaks as we get ready for our show.
Yeah, correct. I mean,
so do you
I just don't know
this,
how I'm gonna do well here.
I don't even remember what show it was. I think it was True Detective, right?
Okay.
The first season. I don't know why this made me think of it, but the shtick circles, like when you guys are middle of your show, your producers, and then like Grant and I are there, and like everybody's kind of gathered around. You remember this is I don't know why I just thought of this, but so I had a theory about True Detective,
okay.
Right? Because I missed the first couple, just living my life, and then watched them all like right in a row. So I had that advantage of not having to wait a week, and I just sort of ripped them all off and was caught up. And I had a theory that turned out to be not correct. Drab initially accuses me of ripping off the theory from somewhere and then made fun of me later because the theory was not correct.
Okay.
And we're like, which can you do that? Can you have both ways in that circumstance?
Hey,
you're just
sitting
in the
cat
perch taking pot shots. Yeah,
right.
That's not fair. But I don't know why I thought it, but one of those shtick circles where if you're not in on the show, it's just probably the most aggravating thing in the world to listen to or hear.
No, it's fine. I don't begrudge people for getting into Game of Thrones or whatever it is, the Wire or what, Breaking Bad. I mean, I have so many pop culture blind spots. Like two of my kids tell me all the time, why haven't you watched Breaking Bad? What are you doing?
What are you doing?
What are you doing with your worthless life where you haven't watched Breaking Bad? And I'm sure, you know, the same could be applied for Game of Thrones and a bunch of other content that I just have not consumed.
Well, for my pal, Johnny Rake Snakes Cakes Flakes Awville, Breaking Bad should be an order of priority.
It should. I know.
Knowing what I know, knowing you, knowing what you like, having other things that are in your wheelhouse that you've liked, that's the show.
Okay.
That's the one. Do
All
that
right.
one before you do Game of Thrones.
Okay.
I mean, Thrones, you got to suspend some disbelief and you got to be willing to get into like a period piece and medieval times and some things, and everybody's got a British accent and all sorts of like this, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have to put anything away when you watch Breaking Bad.
Okay.
It's just terrific.
All right.
Start to finish.
That might have to be priority one going forward.
Indeed. All right, are you ready to do this thing, my friend?
I think I am. I think I'm ready.
Here we go.
I'm assuming this is Game of Thrones music.
It is, and it's the best intro of any intro that's ever intro.
Okay.
Thank you very much, JT the Vic.
He might know less than me, by the way. JT the Vic, the producer of this fine Cakes and Danny program, installment 3, he might know less than me. If he wants to chime in and be a helper, which probably won't help, he's more than welcome to throughout this segment.
Yeah, no problem, because you watched, 8 minutes or less? I have 5 minutes or less.
Okay.
There you go.
Very solid.
There have been, in the history of the Iron Throne, which is actually made from the swords of the defeated enemies of Aegon Targaryen, I gave you a little hint there.
Okay.
There have been 20 kings that have sat the Iron Throne in addition to others. Give me two people that have sat the Iron Throne, Johnny Cake Solville. Two people that have sat upon the Iron Throne as rulers of Westeros.
All right. I'm writing one down.
Okay.
And I think I can only give a last name for the second. I might not get any credit if this
Let's
is one
we
of
got
the 20.
Here.
I got one name.
right, I'm writing it down.
What
for
kicks
Danny?
Go first. Let me see what we got. Khaleesi, I will give you credit for that. Yes. I will give you credit for that. Yes. Daenerys Targaryen, for a moment, sat in the Iron Throne, ruler of Westeros. I'll give it to you. And Stark, I cannot give credit there.
I think it's too vague.
It is a little vague.
I think there are a million Tony Starks running around in
sure.
Game of Thrones.
Just ruling Westeros here. Iron Man sitting on the throne.
They're in their
Vic, what do you
colored
have?
Iron Man suits.
I'm going to go with Jon Snow.
No, never sat the Iron Throne. Never.
Was it at least a good effort?
It's a tremendous effort. In fact, he had a better claim than Daenerys Targaryen, the aforementioned, that Johnny Cake Saulville just referenced, and I will certainly have that come up later because I don't want to present too much information. Now, give me somebody over the portrayal or over the several seasons of Game of Thrones acted as Hand of the King. Hand of the King. It's like a vice president, Cakesy. It's someone who does all the busy work and carries it out, the will of the king.
Hand of the King.
Hand of the King.
Let's see. Hand of the King. I'm writing it down. I think I've used this. I think I've used this answer before, and I know it's incorrect.
Marvin Bagley Jr. is the response, or the third is who you went with.
I think
Sacramento.
Is he a third
king.
Or is he a junior? I can't. I never.
I would have said junior instinctively, but I can't pull that.
I know he was overdrafted because he was taken before Luka Doncic. That I do know.
Correct.
But I don't think he was the Hand of the King that you were looking for.
Would have accepted John Arryn that got this whole thing started. Mace Tyrell, Eddard Stark, Tyrion Lannister, Tywin Lannister. Later, a lot of different hands of the king. None of them
Lannister.
Play.
I have heard Lannister used a bunch. I don't know in what reference or in what context, but I do know Lannister
play.
Is a thing.
For the Maloofs in Sacramento. Johnny Cakesalva, this is a very simple question. Anybody
okay.
That's anybody will know this one. I'm sure both of you guys will know it. Who made the Night King?
Who made the Night King? All right.
Jon Snow would reference him, the Night King.
All right, I'm just going to use a name that I saw. I think this is from my friend Paulie Flix, who lives in Staten Island,
mm-hmm.
who chimed in yesterday when I threw it out there that I needed some help and some assistance. With Game of Thrones names, people, wizards. I'm going to go with Hodor.
Hodor? If Hodor lived in Mordor, he would be Hodor. That's funny.
Hold on. Johnny
Cakes went with a Hodor.
Have I combined names here? Is there an extra R in here?
The Hodor is not a person. Hodor
okay.
is like a dining service in Mordor. Like you order DoorDash and it goes. It brings gruel to orcs.
Is this
Mordor
a decent attempt? Is this just laughable? I think
it's laughable.
Yeah.
You basically just tried to name a character in our story. And the Night King is ancient. He is eternal.
I told you.
So, Casey, as you, I'm sure you're just playing around. Of course, you know the answer.
Yeah.
The Night King was made by the Children of the Forest in response to the threat of the First Men. Ironically, they created something so dangerous that it threatened their own livelihood as well. So it's one of those things where you're desperate. You turn to something that you don't fully understand. Think of Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight. You make Batman, or you make the Joker, and he's more dangerous even than Batman was to you. That was kind of the same phenomenon there, where the Night King raises his army of the undead.
All right, you went with Children
the
of the Forest.
Children
what does Danny
forest.
Know? This is going back to the first hour of the show. What does Danny know about Children of the Corn from Stephen King? What does he know about that?
He who walks behind the rose, Johnny Cakes. He who walks behind the rose.
Oh, so Danny knows all about Malachi. Oh,
Malachi.
He knows all about this.
Malachi's voice, by the way, couldn't have been more annoying. Like, it took me out of it a little bit in the movie because it's so high-pitched.
Yes.
Like, a rewatch is a little tougher than you'd think because it's almost like he's got helium.
Was it tough for you to see that actor as Malachi and then later to see, I think it was later, to see him as the nerdy guy in Can't Buy Me Love with Patrick Dempsey? Do you know anything about that? Does Danny have any file on this?
My file's a little emptier than it should be. That's a good one. You slip
right,
one past.
So a good rom-com from the 80s, Danny. Can't Buy Me Love with Patrick Dempsey and the guy who played Malachi in Children of the Corn.
Tip of the cap, Johnny Cakes.
Thank you.
You've got some time here. Think about this one. Name a dragon. Name a dragon, Cakes. Name
any a dragon. Dragon from Game of Thrones.
Name a Game of Thrones dragon. Just name one. Name one.
All right.
Name a dragon.
I'm making up a name. And hopefully I'm close.
You won't use EuroLeague or whatever NFL no. for the Barcelona
no,
Dragons.
I'm making up a... I did consider writing down Jim Zorn because he was a Seattle Dragon of
he
the
was?
Shortly-lived XFL. But I'm going to go with Bizidor.
Bizidor. Interesting. I'm going to have to say that's incorrect,
okay.
unfortunately.
All right.
The three dragons.
By the way, how many could I choose from?
Well, I just had a list of four real quick. I figured you'd pull from one of those four.
Right.
The three that we see are Drogon, Rhaegal, and Viserion. And we could also have many references to Beleriand the Dread, who was twice the size, three times the size, according to some legend, of those dragons, of course, as Aemon Targaryen.
I would choose Viserion over. During allergy season and drop it into my eyeballs so to alleviate the allergy season, Danny. You know
I like
this.
The zing.
Thank
I like
you.
The zing,
Thank
my
you.
Friend. All right. Give me two family houses. Give me two prominent family houses from Game of Thrones.
All right.
Two family houses.
I'm going to throw more than two out there and hope that I'm hitting on two of them.
Go for it.
I'm writing down.
Mm-hmm.
I think these are right. All right, I'm going to show you my answers.
Let me see what you got, buddy.
We'll start with Stark.
Stark, that is correct. The Starks in Winterfell. There will always be a Stark in Winterfell. Bam, they're of the North. The North remembers Johnny Cakes. The Starks, yes.
I don't really like the North so much, the Raptors, that whole bit, but I understand it. They're Canadian.
We the North is so nubs.
Snow?
No. Now, here's where you're getting into trouble.
Okay.
There are four regions, right? And you got the North, you've got basically the West, East, and South. Bastard children, because that's a very common thing in this world of Westeros,
yes, okay? Right.
They don't get the house name.
Oh,
all bastards in the North have the last name of Snow. In the South, it's Sand, and then it's River in different places.
So they're all named after weather patterns or elements or...
Something intrinsic to the neighborhood where they're from, basically, right? So
okay.
Snow is not one of the houses.
All right. The last one on my paper.
Lannister's correct.
Yes.
Lannister's correct. Johnny
Look
Cake Smallville, correct. Good for
Fully
you.
Correct.
You got two.
Not even partial credit.
Yep. Not even almost in a certain way. That is correct, my friend.
I would have accepted. I am firmly ensconced in the Danny Rouillet circle of correctness.
Would have accepted Targaryen, Baratheon, Martell, Karstark, Arryn, Tullys, Bolton, Tarleys, Freys, the Mormonts, Tyrells.
I mean,
but you got a couple. You were correct.
I think that's
100%.
Honestly, I think that's the first I'm hearing of all of those family names. Ever. I've heard of
Guy.
These.
You've heard of Baratheon.
I don't think I've heard of Baratheon.
Matt Baratheon, producer.
The Tyrells. I'm sure I knew who the Tyrells were. Come on.
About the Tyrells.
I don't know anything about them.
Johnny Cake Smallville, two in a row here for you.
All right.
There is a group of people. They live north of the wall. What are their names? And for bonus, who's their leader? Big group of people lives north of the wall where it's butt cold.
Okay.
And they're afraid because you've got the Night King and his army of the undead. And they're moving. They're on the move. They live north of the wall.
All right.
What are they called and who is their leader?
I'm kind of grasping here, Danny. But I am writing something down, and it is not a joke answer.
Okay.
I don't think. All right.
Let's
so the first
it,
part again, repeat the first part of the question.
They live, they're a group of people, they live
yes.
north of the wall. There's a second answer that technically is correct, but it's not what I'm going for. But if you give it to me, I'll give it to you.
Okay.
You follow me?
All right.
The Night Walkers. The Night Walkers. These are ladies of the night that used to be on 14th Street. That is a negative, sir.
That doesn't count. That's not what you're looking for?
So the White Walkers are who you're speaking of. They're
right.
They're the undead, right?
Okay.
That are their
yes.
leaders, the Night King, right? So they roll with the Night King.
Yes.
Then you've got their army of undead that are called the Whites, W-I-G-H-T, as opposed to just guys like you and me that
okay.
are very standard.
Right.
The folks that live north of the wall are the Wildlings, looking for the Wildlings.
there. The Wild Lynx?
The Wildlings.
The
like
Wild
Lings box. Yeah.
Okay, the Wildlings.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Your leader's Mance Rayder.
I think this is their leader.
Ice King. No. It's just not right. It's just not right.
The Ice King is incorrect.
The Night King.
Hold on. The Ice King doesn't lead the Nightwalkers. What sort of garbage program is this, Danny?
That's another thing that you're going to write. That's your fantasy novel, not a sci-fi novel, a fantasy novel.
That's correct.
Where the Nightwalkers are led by the Ice King. By the way, intellectual property issues would abound there.
If you
wrote a big story, you're like, so there's this Ice King, and then there are these Nightwalkers.
Yeah. Also, have accepted, problems there.
Also would have accepted Craster. And Craster's Keep there, which is technically would have been correct. They're a group of people, but it's the Wildlings, and their leader is Mance Rayder.
Nah.
Give me, there are five, but I'll accept two. The names of the direwolves of the Stark children. The names of the direwolves of the Stark children, Johnny Cakes.
Okay, so are these actual wolves or are these semi-humans? Can I get any sort of help here?
They're giant. They grow to be enormous wolves. I mean, huge wolves. Like, you remember, and this is a weird bit, but you see the movie Annihilation? Did you catch Annihilation? Natalie Portman, Rouye, wacky bit flick, Tessa Thompson?
No.
It's not important.
Got nothing on that.
It's that's science fiction, by the way. It's butt weird. And they go into this shimmer, and there's this bear creature.
Okay.
What happens in the shimmer is everything mutates, like, horribly, and that's kind of what ends up happening. There's this bear creature that is part boar, part bear, and it's all jacked up and weird. The direwolves grow to be about that size. None of this analogy doesn't help you at all. I'm just giving you information. Doesn't.
It's not helping at all. All
right, the wolves, when they get full grown, are basically as tall as a man.
All right, so here's what enormous. I'm going to do. Full disclosure. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cheat on this.
Cheat.
But I'm not going to, like, an official Game of Thrones website. I'm going to go to my Twitter, at Money Metal Cakes, and I'm just going to pick out a name that somebody gave, put up yesterday, and use this as my answer, even though I'm sure it's going to be wrong. And somebody did respond yesterday, the dire wolves are the Starks' pets.
They're the pets, yeah.
They are the pets. They are the house pets of the Starks.
There are five children, including the bastard Jon Snow, and so they all end up with dire wolves in the first episode.
The problem is I just don't know any of their names. All right, I'm just going to write down a name. I've stalled for long enough.
You have Ron Hextalled for long enough.
I have Ron Hextalled. And I'm sure this is wrong, but I just want to get a laugh out of Funny Danny. So I'm going to go with Tyrion.
Tyrion. Oh, my
Tyrion.
God.
Tyrion. Is this insulting your...
That was mean. That was
mean?
That was mean.
Who is Tyrion? I need it.
Lannister. Tyrion Lannister is the third child of Tywin Lannister that is resented because he is a dwarf in the show, and his birth ends up killing the Lannister's mother. So the sister, Cersei, hates his guts. Tywin hates his guts. He is the unwanted son that ends up having a massive influence over all the events in Game of Thrones. So to me, I think when George R.R.R. Martin sits down to write the books, that's one of the first characters he thinks of, because it's an incredible character. A guy that in a world that is based on, like, toughness and alliances, he's despised, and he can't fight, and he survives. And it's amazing. He adapts.
So what you're telling me in a roundabout way is that he's not a wolf.
Not a wolf. Not a wolf.
Okay.
If I had said, who's the most important character, and you went Tyrion, I would go, oh, good answer, Casey.
Right.
With the names of the wolves. Grey Wind, Shaggy Dog, Lady Ghost, Summer, and Nymeria. Grey Wind, Shaggy Dog, Lady Ghost, Summer, and Nymeria.
They have a wolf whose name is Shaggy Dog.
Yeah. So you get the Stark children together.
Yeah.
The youngest is Rickon. By the way, don't ask him to cross a field when Ramsay Bolton's back there. Don't ask him to cross that field.
Okay. He'll get shot by an arrow.
He'll get pummeled by an arrow. Yes. Little kid names his dog. That's the name he chose. Not a good one. Okay. We're gonna say it's not a good name.
Probably not.
But he's a little kid. That's what he does. Who is the young wolf? Who is known as the young wolf? In an exchange with Jaime Lannister, Jaime Lannister says to the young wolf, a couple of victories don't make you a conqueror. And his response, aye, but it's better than three defeats.
Who is known as the young wolf?
The young wolf.
Three victories don't make you a conqueror. Aye, but it's better than three defeats.
This is, I'm sure this is wrong, and I'm sure I'll be mocked, but I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'm writing it down anyway, because it's one of the few names that I know.
It's not Jon Snow. It's not Jon Snow. It's not Jon Snow.
It was either going to be Jon Snow or Demon Smoke Baby. One of those two was going to come down, be written on a sheet of paper.
Out of Melisandre. That's Robb Stark is who we're looking for, the eldest son of Ned Stark. The moment that Vic referenced that he knew about, it's like the one moment that he knows about.
Yes.
Is the hardest, most shocking moment in the show.
I think I should call Jason Bishop as a lifeline because I know he's watched at least one full episode of Game of Thrones. And he said, you know, dragons were flying around. And after that, he was just done.
And he was out, I'm sure. If you come in late and they're you're going, what is this? Army of the Undead, dragons, what are we doing? There's no way. It builds up and it gives you slow little doses where you go, okay, I can accept all these kinds of things.
The Game of Thrones, clearly, you need to start with S1, F1.
Yep.
Don't come in late or in the middle.
You come in halfway, it's going to make no sense. But Robb Stark and the Red Wedding, that's what I'll say. Let's go to this. Give me one. I'm asking for just one Game of Thrones battles. Give me one Game of Thrones battle. You can use the entire history if you would like. I thought of 12 myself that we see in the show, but there are others in the history that you could reference. Give me one Game of Thrones battle, Kixie. One.
All right, one battle. I clearly don't know it, so I'm just giving you a fictional battle, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to test your musical knowledge here.
Oh, no.
I think you're going to pull this. Battle of Evermore.
What is the Battle of Evermore? I know that.
Who's
what
the
is the Battle of Evermore?
Led Zeppelin ring any bells?
Oh. What was that bit? What I don't. That's not jogging my memory.
It's a song.
It's a song.
Maybe Vic can play it at some point.
Well, that's their first team they have the song name that has nothing to do with what happens in the song.
I know nothing about the content of the song.
Yeah. Led Zeppelin loves that bit.
They certainly do.
So battles. The sack of Astapor by Daenerys Targaryen. The raid of Craster's Keep. The assault on the Dreadfort. The Battle of Winterfell 1. That's the Stannis Baratheon version. Siege of Meereen. The Battle Beyond the Wall. Hardhome, in my opinion, one of the five greatest episodes of television of all time. Battle of Winterfell Part 2. The Battle of Blackwater. Battle of Castle Black. And where Rickon meets his demise. The amazingly well-shot, incredible Battle of the Bastards. Johnny Cakes all would have accepted any of those.
So the next time I take a Game of Thrones quiz, when I get asked about a battle, because I won't remember all of those, I'll just do battle of and fill in the blank of one of those words, and hopefully I'll be correct.
Pretty much.
Hopefully one of the words that you've thrown out that I have no idea what it means or what it refers to, I'll just put it at the end of battle of and be correct.
I didn't even reference the sack of the loot train. I don't even call it a battle because Daenerys rolls in with Drogon, and it's not even a battle. It's a massacre, right? When you start talking Cersei's troops and the Dothraki horde on horseback, I don't even have time to explain to you what went down
there. So that would have counted had I written that down?
Had you pulled the sack of the loot train, I would have given you the nod there. And then the ransacking of the Tyrell gold.
How much would you have bet against me writing down? Hold on, let me see if I can remember.
My life savings is the answer.
What if I had written this down? Battle of Craster? Is that right? Is that correct?
Yeah. The Raid of Craster's Keep. I would have accepted that.
What if I had written that down? It would have blown your mind.
I would have had to do the rest of the show without clothes on. I mean, that would be incredible.
Yeah.
If you picked that obscure moment that led to the revolt against the old bear.
I mean, I don't know if Craster is a place. I don't know if it's a person. I don't know if it's a demon. I don't know if it's a smoke baby. I don't know what Craster is.
Here's your takeaway. Like if you have a little leftovers, you get a little doggy bag when you take away from this show today.
Yeah.
He was a terrible dude. A terrible dude.
Craster, bad dude.
He gave every male son that he had to the White Walkers.
Not the Night Walkers.
No, not the Night Walkers. Not Kenny Skywalker won the slam dunk contest in the early 90s. He gave every male child he had to the White Walkers so they could build up their population, and he kept every daughter and then made more kids with them.
Oh, yeah, he sounds like a bad dude.
Kind of a terrible dude, yeah, honestly.
Probably does.
Pretty terrible dude. I don't know how much more time we have, but I'll throw you a couple quickies here.
Okay.
Name of the capital city. Name of the capital city of Westeros.
Capital city of Westeros.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Stinky slums, poverty, grossness, Red Keep.
I'm going to go with Northeros.
Northeros. Would be interesting. Be interesting. Where do you live? Northeros, Westeros. What's your zip code? King's Landing. Looking for King's Landing, my friend. King's Landing.
Sounds like a fancy question. Like subdevelopment outside of like Annapolis.
Doesn't it?
Sounds very nice.
Yeah, I actually would seem
it's probably
very,
not,
very pleasant.
But it sounds like very fancy, kind of highfalutin.
Like a very pleasant place.
Yeah.
What act set the events that we get to see on television? What act sent the events of Game of Thrones in motion? What act sent the events of Game of Thrones as we know it in motion?
I don't know many events that have happened on that show, but this is one of the big ones. I'm sure it's gonna be laughed at. The Red Wedding.
No, sir. Now, the Red Wedding, good reference. Good for you. You mentioned something from Game of Thrones.
Yes.
That's a finale. That's a huge moment in the third season. It is the poisoning of Jon Arryn, at that time Hand of the King, and a letter of lies sent by Lysa Arryn cautioning her sister, Catelyn Tully, at now Catelyn Stark, that the Lannisters were responsible. The man behind it all. Peter Baelish, a.k.a. Littlefinger, Johnny Cake Sawville. Littlefinger set the whole thing in motion.
All right, give me one more. Give me one more just to try to vindicate myself, and then we're gonna turn the tables on Danny, and he's going to take a music quiz when we come back.
This one's really hard.
Test his knowledge.
Who are Jon Snow's parents, and what does it mean for his relationship to Daenerys Targaryen? Who are Jon Snow's parents, and what does it mean for his relationship to Daenerys Targaryen?
Jon Snow's parents.
Jon Snow's parents. I will tell you, his real parents. We're told early that the most honorable man in Westeros, Ned Stark, when he was off at war, fathered a bastard son and forced his wife, Catelyn Stark, to deal with it, to adopt it. And he would never tell her the real story because he was sworn to secrecy. So she resents Jon Snow, and it's but awkward for him to grow up with the regular Stark kids. But we learn that Ned Stark ain't the real dad. We learn that Catelyn Stark was unfair to Jon Snow and who his real parents are.
Real parents. Jon Snow's real parents?
Uh-huh.
The Duke and Duchess of Winterfell. See, I just put of Winterfell with something that doesn't make any sense.
It sounds right.
It sounds kind of official.
So Ned Stark's sister, Lyanna Stark, has an affair with Rhaegar Targaryen cakes. Rhaegar Targaryen. So when Ned Stark and Robert Baratheon and company assault the Tower of Joy, where the Sword of the Morning, Sir Arthur Dayne, the greatest swordsman that ever lived, mind you, is defending the Tower of Joy, and they overcome the Sword of the Morning. Amazing. One of the great battles of all time.
There's a lot of Rhaegar Targaryen mentions. These must be very important.
They overname their kids.
It is.
They overname their kids like one of four or five names. It's Aemon, it's Aegon, it's Rhaegar, it's Rhaegon, Rhaegal, all that kind of crap, okay? So Ned Stark rolls in and sees his sister Lyanna having just given birth, and he's like, what? You want to explain to me what the hell's going on here? She does, swears him to secrecy, and it's because it's a union that wasn't supposed to happen. And so Jon Snow is really and truly the nephew of Daenerys Targaryen. Her older brother, Rhaegar, has a son. He's got the better claim to the throne than she does, and the whole arc is about her claiming the damn throne. Oh, it's a mess, Cakesy. It's a mess.
It is a mess.
That's the splinter that leads to their conflict. She throws a tantrum, and then what Justin Schlegel mentioned to you is she basically gets ticked off and burns down King's Landing with Drogon because she was a little yuck about not having... her claim being sort of splintered there.
Danny, we don't need to concern ourselves with my score on the Game of Thrones quiz. I did poorly.
You got one right.
I got one right. I got one. It's more than I thought I would get correct. When we come back, Danny's going to do better on his quiz. It's bands that Flakes has seen in concert that Danny probably hasn't. So we'll get to that next on Cakes and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.